values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
All right, thanks so much for being here. We normally have news up until 11:05, but we are awaiting in just a moment being connected with Senator Kyrsten Sinema. Conversation with the senator. She played such a key role in the passage of the debt ceiling. I wanted to have a conversation with her and kind of let you hear the thought process behind it and kind of her role in making all of this happen. Senator, welcome back to the show.
Well, it's great to be with you. How are you?
I'm doing well. I really am so curious about the debt ceiling because it's been talked about that you played a key role in kind of the balance between Republicans and Democrats and getting that through the Senate. Can you talk about your role in that and what your hand you had in getting that passed?
Sure. Well, I hope it's no surprise to Arizonans. That's the role I try to play every day here in the United States Senate, which is to try and make the place function and make it work and make life a little bit better for Arizonans. So actually earlier this year, the very beginning of the year, I spent some time with Speaker Kevin McCarthy, who is a good friend of mine. We served together in the House for many years, and talked with him as early as January about the fact that this was going to be coming and that we would have to work together ultimately to solve the problem and protect our country from default. And so he and I were in close communication over the course of these 5 months. I mean, to be honest, we're always in close communication because we're friends. But more directly, in the last 4 weeks, I worked very closely with the House negotiators. Speaker McCarthy appointed Representative Garrett Graves and Representative Patrick McHenry to be his negotiators. I served with both of them and am very good friends with both of those guys. And the White House, I encouraged them to send their best negotiators, people who had a good relationship with McCarthy and his team already, which is Steve Ricchetti of the White House and Shalonda Young, who runs the Office of Management and Budget. And so the good news is that once those four began truly negotiating, they had a good working relationship, very honest and forthright with each other, and very practical and outcome-oriented. My job during that three-week process was really to be a liaison between the two groups to help them understand what the other side needed and to help think of creative ways to help meet each party's needs. And I was happy to do it, but boy, it was long hours.
Yeah, I can only imagine what that was like. So what were some of the, can you give me some of the sticking points? Like what were some of the deal breakers for each on each side from the House, from the Republican side and Democrat side? And how were you able to help bridge those gaps?
Sure. So one of the challenges was that House Republicans, particularly Garrett Graves, really wanted some language around permitting reform. Now, that sounds kind of wonky, but what it really means is how to change the legal process so that we can do pipelines, but also the production of green energy faster with less litigation to try and speed it up. That's actually a really high priority for us in Arizona. We provide many of the critical minerals that build the batteries for the future of our energy independence. And it's really hard to get through the bureaucratic red tape to actually do that mining. So this is a high priority for Arizona. Democrats wanted to ensure that there was language on transmission, which is basically how we get the energy from one place where it's produced to where it's actually utilized. And there was a lot of tension between the two parties about the balance of permitting versus transmission. And part of what I did was help come up with creative ideas to meet both of those needs and to help them strike a balance of kind of evenness on both sides of that equation so that people in both parties would go comfortable voting for the negotiated deal. Another issue that we dealt with was work requirements for entitlement programs,
right,
like food stamps. And that was an area where the president was not interested in coming to an agreement. And one of the things that I did was help my colleagues at the White House understand that they were going to have to get something done there, because it was absolutely critical for Speaker McCarthy to have something on work requirements in order for him to get the votes from his conference. And I think that it took a while for folks to hear that and believe it, but ultimately we got there.
When you look at this deal as a whole, do you think it's a good deal, or do you think it was maybe the best that we were going to get with the current political climate in D.C.?
I think that this deal was the outcome of an honestly brokered, negotiated agreement between two groups, the White House and Speaker McCarthy's team, who were acting in good faith with each other. Is it a perfect deal? No, there's no such thing. Is it a fair deal? Absolutely. Is it a deal that can be implemented fairly by people on both sides of the political spectrum? Yes. To be honest, the thing that I am most sad about was how long it took them to get started. You know, they should have started much sooner. And it's unfortunate that the political posturing went on for so long that it delayed the start of the negotiations. And as you know, that made it difficult when the bill came to the Senate. We didn't have much time to process the bill in the Senate. As folks in Arizona know, bills take 5 days or longer to process in the United States Senate. And the only way to speed that up is to get 100 senators to agree to an agreement to speed it up. And so one of the things that I spent a lot of time last week doing on Wednesday and Thursday was brokering that agreement between all 100 senators so that we could get the vote moved quickly. And most importantly, to have the bill passed before the markets opened last Friday so that we could keep our domestic and international market healthy.
Is this a blueprint for negotiations going forward? Is this possibly the bridge where both sides realize now with good faith negotiations, nobody gets everything they want, but each of them can get something they want?
Well, to be honest, if people are just realizing that now, that's really disappointing. Because over the last 2 years, as Arizona's know, I led bipartisan negotiations on a variety of major packages that have had a huge impact on Arizona. The bipartisan infrastructure law, our CHIPS and Science law, our historic gun violence and mental health prevention law, the bill that we passed last fall to protect interracial and same-sex marriages. I mean, the list of bipartisan achievements that were crafted in this exact same method is really long. So it's my hope that people would now believe that not only is this a productive way to get things done, it's the only way to get lasting change.
I know that you are on a very tight schedule, but I have one last question, and that is KTAR News is doing a really in-depth series next week on the homelessness problem across the state of Arizona and a lot of its causes in different levels. I know you have a connection to this topic like most people don't. Can you comment a little bit about the problem nationwide, but especially here in your home state?
About that. You know, Arizonans know that when I was growing up, my family faced really difficult times when we were homeless for a period of my childhood. We made it through okay, right? Like, I'm doing okay now, but homelessness has gotten worse in Arizona than even when I was a child. So we know that the official count of homelessness is up 23% in Arizona. Now, nationally, it's gone up by 1%. So in Arizona, it's actually even worse. It's been increasing at a worse level than it is in other states. And much of that is because we don't have transitional housing for folks who have recently experienced homelessness. So folks are staying in shelters for a longer period of time, whereas shelters are supposed to be just for emergency. And so that means that if someone becomes homeless, there often isn't emergency shelter available for them. And that's why homelessness is more visible than it has been in the past. So I'm working with my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to try and identify solutions that help nonprofits and other groups in Arizona navigate bureaucracy, cut through red tape, improve coordination, and then also incentivize the development of more affordable housing so that more folks in Arizona can get access to long-term housing and not rely on emergency shelters.
Yeah, the city of Phoenix is partnering with St. Vincent de Paul in a multi-million dollar project for not just a shelter, but that kind of transitional housing. Are you in favor of that kind of private government partnerships to grow and be bigger? Is that kind of a helping toward a solution?
Absolutely. I mean, anyone who pretends that the government will have the solution for this just needs to look around and see that indeed the government does not. Know that private entities can't do this on their own because it's fiscally just not viable to do so. So these public-private partnerships where we're leveraging the use of local, state, and federal dollars and matching them and enhancing them with private investment, that's a way to find success and to find long-term solutions to the homelessness challenge we face in Arizona.
Senator, I appreciate the time. I know you're on a big time crunch, and for making this work, I certainly appreciate it. We look forward to talking to you soon.
Well, thanks so much for having me on today. I really am grateful.
All right. That is Senator Kyrsten Sinema spending a few moments with us as we've covered the topic of the debt ceiling, which I thought was an interesting perspective working on this month ahead of time. And then the conversation about homelessness and how honest she's been, very forthright about this, which is why I felt comfortable asking her about her situation growing up. I've talked about my connection having a cousin who died homeless in Las Vegas, and so I've never been homeless, but I had a connection to it. It's got to be a different perspective when you're a child growing in that environment and kind of having a different perspective. So just to kind of recap just for a moment, we talked about the debt ceiling, and she talked about a couple of different things that were sticking points that I didn't realize were as big of issues as they really were. One of them was the permitting reform, which we all think is important. We've talked about mining, and we may talk a little bit more about it later, but Congressman Ciscomani, coincidentally today, put out a press release saying that they are trying to get copper designated as a critical mineral so that we can continue. 70% of the U.S. copper is mined here in the state of Arizona. And so to get that designated as a critical mineral, but then to expedite the process, no one is talking about foregoing safety. No one talks about that. But the red tape is immense in trying to get these projects done. So on one side of this argument was permitting reform so that these mines could get active and we could get the minerals that we need to build toward the direction that it seems like the world is going. The other part of this was about transmission, and for the other side, having access with these other alternative energy sources and access to the transmission lines and how that transmission was going to happen. And she talked about the work requirements, which I think is a good idea. I'm not heartless either. I've talked about this before, growing up myself very poor. Fortunately, my mother never took public assistance, but public assistance is just that, assistance, and having a work requirement where this isn't about punishment for people that need help. What it is about motivation. And I think that that's a good thing to do. Be there to help people. But if you sustain people, when I'm not talking about people that can't care for themselves, I'm talking about people that aren't caring for themselves. People fall on hard times. But if you're able-bodied, getting you back into that workforce and self-sufficiency, that is before you get to be homeless. I think those are the keys. So very grateful to Senator Sinema for spending a few moments with us today and having a conversation about this. And you could see she was in transit, so it was kind of in and out. But it was a good conversation, and we hope to talk to her again soon. Coming up in just a few moments, we have a segment of the show we do every day at 11:20. We call it Did You Hear This? It's how we catch you up on the major news stories and the big happenings of the day. And there is still so many big stories going on. So we're going to get to Did You Hear This? Coming up here in just a couple of moments.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right, time to get you caught up on the big, big news stories of the day. Did you hear this?
Did you hear this? Broomhead's reaction to the hottest news stories.
The Arizona Department of Housing has made a move to address homelessness. KTAR's Taylor Tassler has some details.
Phoenix, Scottsdale, Tempe, Tucson, and Coconino County will receive nearly $20 million from the Arizona Department of Housing. The funding will be used to provide shelter and other services to those experiencing homelessness.
Phoenix gets the largest sum, but in light of some American cities like San Francisco doling out dough to combat homelessness, only to have the problem escalate, is the money the end-all solution?
Well, it's not just the money, but it's how it's invested. And I mean invested. If it is just going to be about temporarily pulling people off the street, giving them a bed to sleep in so they're not sleeping on the sidewalk, we're never going to solve this problem. If we, as we just talked with the senator about, if there is a transitional housing option, if there is an option for people that gets them to a place that gets whatever it is that got them homeless there or keeps them homeless. Sometimes there's a criminal background of petty things that stops them from getting a driver's license and being able to go back to work, overcoming that. Sometimes there are substance abuse issues that have to be overcome. If there is a transitional time where people are given the opportunity to move forward with their life, whether it's job training or transportation or otherwise, that could help be a solution. So in the investment, it can't just be in buildings and beds. It has to be in solutions. If we do that, we're going to be much better off than a lot of these other cities.
Sinema joined a moment ago on her role in the debt ceiling negotiations.
That's the role I try to play every day here in the United States Senate, which is to try and make the place function and make it work and make life a little bit better for Arizonans.
Were you encouraged by her, by your conversation with her, and actually somebody who wants to make Congress function?
Well, that's it. I've always gotten along with the senator, even when she was in the House, and when she was even before that in the state legislature, even though we're at the time then in opposite political parties, I always got along well with her. The idea that you're going to make D.C. work better, I think, is also a pretty big undertaking. It is dysfunctional by nature. D.C. has put the funk in dysfunction for sure. But the idea that she is going to be able to cross over both with both parties and help people get to an agreement, I think that does force people's hands at least to work together. And that I do like. You are listening to Did You Hear This? We do it every day at this time to catch you up on the major headlines.
Chris Paul's future with the Phoenix Suns seems to be up in the air. Here's a report from our own Colton Krolak.
The team notified Paul that he would be waived, according to NBA insider Chris Haynes. The point guard spent three seasons in the Valley and nearly helped deliver the team's first ever championship. With the move, the Suns avoid paying a big chunk of Paul's remaining $30.8 million contract over the next 2 years.
From what I'm hearing, the move has yet to be made official. What are your thoughts?
I'm sure they would rather trade him than just release him. I'm sure that would be an option. But more than anything else, I think this is about culture. And I'll tell you why. The new owner has made a splash, what he did to get KD. He has made some big moves to tell not just the city of Phoenix and the people of Arizona, but also I think people within that building that we are going to make moves and whatever the moves are necessary to get us to a championship. Complacency is not an option. The new head coach has said he wants to work with DeAndre Ayton, and he believes he can turn that young man into the player that fits his potential. We'll see if that works out. But when you take a player that is loved and is iconic and as good as Chris Paul, it tells everybody nobody is safe. We are going to make moves that are financially and on the court best for us to get placed to win a championship. I think that culture shift, more than anything else, tells the story. But in the end, CP3 is still a phenomenal player. He will be missed, especially if the worst case scenario in my mind is he ends up going to play with LeBron and the Lakers. Then I got to hate the guy. And I can't put my mind, I can't wrap my arms around disliking him. But that would be a great team. And I don't know that I'd want to see him playing in the division.
All right, it's my Friday, so we're going to have a little fun with this last one.
All right.
Hotels.com unveiled its inaugural room service report. In it, they detailed the top 10 most unusual room service requests. Here are the top four. Number four is boiled bottled water. Number three is blowfish. Number two is melted ice cream. And number one, diet water. Do you have a weird room service order?
Diet water?
Yeah, I know. I read that and I was like, what?
I have never heard of diet water. No, you know, when I go...
Maybe it has negative calories instead of zero calories.
No, you know, I'm not a room service guy for the most part. If I do, it's usually a meal. I usually go down to the restaurant myself. So I'm not a room server. I'm a mini bar guy. In a pinch, I'm a mini bar guy,
okay.
But I'm not a room service person, and I don't have any weird, you know me, I'm pretty simple. I want, you know, tacos. How about that? If you got tacos at midnight, I'll pay anything. I'll pay anything for
tacos.
Would
you pay $1,600 for a burger, though?
No.
Because one hotel on this list has a $1,600 burger with 24-carat brioche bun.
Huh, really?
Yeah.
Well, they can, never mind what they can do with that bun, but no, I'm not buying that. But no, I have no weird requests for room service.
All right.
Great job, Jess, and I hope you have fun on your trip. Everybody's leaving us. What we're going to do in a couple of moments is we're going to talk about homelessness and how we address it versus other states. One of the things that I find to be, personally, just for, on a personal note, addressing these issues in a more comprehensive way, that word sounds, it's one of those corporate words, and I'm not a big fan of it either. It's like synergy, and when you start hearing bosses use that in meetings, it's usually that they don't really have much to say, and they're hoping big words kind of fluff things up. But a comprehensive approach, and we're going to get into a little bit more of that, because I don't think you isolate problems. I don't think homelessness is one issue, and crime is another issue, and I think a lot of these can work together to help reduce or increase each other. It is about housing. It is about affordable housing. But I can promise you, just building more housing is not going to solve this problem. There is a bigger approach because there are different reasons why people find themselves homeless. If we look at that, if we can look at some of the key factors that are causing it, hunger and homelessness going hand in hand, but they're not always the same. There are plenty of hungry people that are getting assistance that are not homeless. And there are plenty of people that are homeless that are not homeless for what you think are the classic reasons. It's an interesting study. KTAR News is going to be doing this series next week, and it's a topic I've talked about very often. But in a moment, nearly $20 million has been awarded across Arizona from this fund. How will the cities use this money? For me, that's the bigger question. So that's what I want to dive into next.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. Appreciate you spending some time with the show as we roll into our final half hour. We've talked a couple of times about this. It's going to be a big series here coming up. KTAR News doing a comprehensive, huge, deep dive into homelessness and the issue around the valley and around Arizona. And I looking at some of the things that are coming in the next week, it is going to be an incredible series, and I'm happy to be a part of it. I'm proud to be a part of it. It's a topic I talk about often because I am a proud capitalist. What I mean by that is I think the capitalist way of life lifts. I do think that a rising tide lifts all boats. I think the quality of life in a thriving place, even for people that are considered the working poor, is a better lifestyle. Here in America, we have got a great quality of life. The average home in America has more screens in it. I used to say televisions, and it was true about televisions, but now with laptops and with tablets and everything else, the average house has more screens, and I'm not talking about your cell phone. Eliminate the cell phone. More screens in it than people. That's a pretty staggering statistic. And so it shows the quality of life is higher here. It doesn't mean we're perfect, but we do have a good high quality of life. We addressed this issue of homelessness, nearly $20 million awarded across Arizona to help homelessness. Now, first of all, I don't think the $20 million is enough. It's not going to fix the problem. But you also can't fix the problem for people that don't want to be fixed. Now, there's a number of reasons that contribute to that. There are people that are addicts that are not in a place where they think that the addiction is the problem. That's what happened in my family. My cousin who died homeless was an addict. He was a heroin addict. And I don't know what other drugs he used, but I know he used heroin and he drank. He drank a lot. And he did not want help. Help was available. His oldest sister, my oldest cousin, had a very stable home. He loved his nieces. He had nieces and loved his nieces, and was just fantastic. A relationship with his family, but he did not want help. He did not want to get out of the cycle of addiction, and it ended up killing him. And it's always bothered me, except I've always been very well aware that he was one of those statistics of people that did not want help. Somebody had given him a cart that attached to his bicycle. It's one of those carts, I guess they make them fairly regularly, that it attaches to the back wheel of a bicycle. So that, you know, to the two bolts on the side of attach your back tire to the back forks. And so he would pull that cart around and he would wash windows for businesses and for cars. And that's how he would make enough money to buy food and drugs. And he lived outside. And he did not want help. But then there are people that have mental illness, and when you combine the two, if you have someone that is suffering from a mental illness and they're using illicit drugs to medicate instead of proper medication to help their mental illness, you have a bigger problem, and there are people that don't want to be helped. The reason why I'm even spending so much time on talking about those things specifically is because there are different approaches for what we're going to do with homelessness. And if we take this $20 million, which is not enough, but if you take 20, let's say you had 20 million just in Phoenix. We don't, but let's say 20 million went just to Phoenix. What would end up happening is if you built places for people to sleep, you're not going to solve the problem. Now, people would not sleep outside, but the homelessness problem would not end. You would still have people living on the streets because they refuse to live by shelter rules which are no drugs, no cohabitation, that kind of thing. Many places don't allow animals. But there's a number of reasons why people refuse help. You are still going to have a homeless problem. Until you address the drug issue, until you address the crime issue, until people get the message that vagrancy is not going to be tolerated. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, people have to understand that we are going to give you so many opportunities to fix your situation, because living on the sidewalk in front of businesses, if you're an addict, doing drugs openly, is that we are not going to become San Francisco. We are not going to be cleaning human waste off the streets. We're not going to have an app that when you see somebody relieving themselves in the street, you can put it on an app and somebody will clean up like you would after a dog. We're not going to do that. So part of it is that attitude. The other part of this is understanding what makes people homeless. There is a big event that happens every year for veterans, specifically for veterans, and it's called the Stand Down, and it happens at the Coliseum every year. And if you've never been, it's an amazing event that happens, because people that work in this world, which is why I love private industry. One of the things, we had Senator Kyrsten Sinema on. If you missed the interview at 11 o'clock, please listen to the podcast. I talked with her about this issue of homelessness, and I asked her about a public-private partnership, and she loves the idea. She said, if government thinks they're going to solve this problem, they're wrong. And I just thought, it was refreshing to hear her say that. But people out there that over time in dealing with homeless people that want to get out of the cycle of homelessness and realizing A, what gets them there, and B, what keeps them there, how can we help them? It is a comprehensive event at the Stand Down where veterans can come in. Haircuts, showers, medical evaluations. But what is it that's gotten you homeless? And I'll give you a real life example. You live in the street, you end up getting a ticket for vagrancy or public indecency because you got caught relieving yourself outside, whatever it is. You get a lot of misdemeanor stuff attached, which means they suspend your driver's license if you've ever had one, and your ability to get one, you can't get one if you've never had one. So what they do is they have courts where they have prosecutors, they have defense attorneys, public defenders, and they have judges. And they adjudicate your case. They give you a punishment of community service or some other thing where your record is clean. You can now that hurdle is gone from you. The idea of St. Vincent de Paul that has a bicycle ministry as part of what they do. And they have volunteers, maybe employees too, but volunteers that take old parts and build bicycles, and then they give them to people as transportation to get to job interviews or jobs. As simple and silly as that sounds, those are some of the things that prevent people from getting to the next step in their life. A haircut, a shower, clean clothing. These, toiletries, on a, all of this stuff makes a difference in hireability. And I know this is an oversimplification in one regard, but not so much that when that block of people that have found themselves in the cycle of homelessness that would like to get out, but because of their circumstances, they are stuck in what is a vicious circle. Breaking that circle and giving them an opportunity could have a segment of our society in transitional housing and then back into the mainstream of society. So that is part of it. And then how you find the ways to deal with addiction and mental illness and things of that nature, the people that refuse help. But we're not going to solve the problem with a one size fits all. If you think let's take a ton of money from the state budget, we spread it around the state, and those cities and those towns buy buildings. We buy old hotels, we buy all these old places, and we give people a place to live so they're not on the street. That does not solve that problem. It will not solve the problem. And you're still going to have crime, and then people are going to say, I don't want that hotel in my neighborhood. Because and again, this is not an insult, but the vagrancy part of that, if you're still people with the same things that they suffer, they can't get a job, they're still destitute, they're still going to the soup kitchens in order to get a meal because they don't have a job, you're not solving anyone's problem. What you're doing is warehousing people. This is a problem that's not going to be solved with money alone. It is going to have an approach that addresses an individual's issue. And not everybody is going to be saved. But if we don't start addressing it that way, look at the options. If we do nothing, Look at cities like San Francisco, truly one of the most beautiful places in this country. Look at what's happening in that city. Look at other cities across the country where we're seeing this open drug use, and it is deteriorating fast. And you add crime to that. That's the issues we're talking about. When it comes to the criminal element and how we solve things, that's another piece of this puzzle. And we'll kind of address that coming up here before we close down the show for the day.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show. KTAR News, 92.3 FM and the KTAR News app.
All right. We've been going down this road of homelessness and the way things are connected together. I've been talking over the last few days. Chief Sullivan from Phoenix PD came in. And I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to start reaching out to some of the agencies around the valley. If you're someone connected in the PIO's office, I would love to start talking to some of the command staff, especially the chiefs in some of the major agencies. We may reach out to Sheriff Penzone as well with these action plans and how you deal with crime in your city. Because when you look around the country at the cities that don't, policy is a terrible thing sometimes. The policies of prosecutors that hinder prosecution when the cops are doing their jobs is one element. But again, when you have towns that are saying we're not going to do these things, the city of Seattle in a 5-4 vote decided against prosecuting open possession and drug use. So if you are openly, and we see this problem, fentanyl, opioids in general, where people are just look like zombies in the street, they say in their mind that it's prosecuting doesn't do any good, that it's a sickness. Now, I believe that addiction is an illness, but there also has to be an element of this that has got to be the key to getting people the help they need. So I just think this is bad policy is my point. If you want to call me heartless for that, you don't know me. I just think that you're wrong in believing that this soft-handed approach when someone is in this position, if you are in such an addiction position that you are openly doing drugs on the city streets, you're in a lower place than you know you are in your life. That's about as close to rock bottom for many people as they can get. In Portland, crime-ridden Portland, the weed industry is getting twice as much funding as new police officers in the city of Portland, Oregon. These are the kind of policy things we talk about. Washington, D.C. has one of the highest murder rates in the country and one of the most strict gun laws. But what are the policies behind their problems? They have reached 100 homicides fastest in 20 years. Since 2003 was the last time they reached 100 homicides as quickly as they have already. We look at Chicago, Illinois, and the problems in Chicago. The funny thing about this, and I'm not going to make the Second Amendment, this is a bigger topic, but when you hear that, this is the kind of myopic view. Guns are the problem. We've got very strict gun laws in Chicago, but the problem is these guns are coming from states where it's easier and easier to get your hands on guns, and they're bringing them to Chicago. Well, then why aren't the murder rates as high as they are in Chicago in the places where these guns are coming from? You understand it's the criminal element that you're not dealing with. That's the problem. That's where the problem lies. And you can be both someone that believes in redemption, that also believes in punishment. I think rehabilitation is a real possibility for most people. You know? But there comes a point where you have to pay a price. That saying I'm sorry without any kind of consequence doesn't get you any closer to changing the bad behavior. You know that happens with your children. It's the same principle as with a child. If a child, and I have a friend, and I'm not going to say his name, but I have a friend I grew up with. We had a conversation recently, and when we were kids, there were no rules in his house. It was the coolest place to hang out. It really was. We had access, he had a sliding glass door. We went from his bedroom out to the pool. On the weekends when his parents went to bed, we were out all night roaming the neighborhood. I'm talking at 12, 13 years old on our bikes, little hellions. There were no rules in that house. And when he did something wrong, his parents rarely punished him for any length of time. And so, you know, it was kind of the fun thing when you were a kid. I was always terrified Not so much of my parents, but just afraid. I wanted to be a cop at a young age, so I was afraid of getting arrested. So when things got to the level of that, where, this could be, I could get locked up for this. I quit. But I was a little juvenile delinquent, and that was the easiest place to be a juvenile delinquent, was his house. We had a conversation. He's now the parent of two children that are about college age. And he said to me in a phone call, you know, sometimes I get upset at my parents because there was no discipline in my house. And I thought, wow, he was the last person I thought I'd hear that from. But realizing that his children are better children than he was made him realize he wished his parents had made him a better child. We understand that punishment is a part of growth, that when limits are set and those limits are broken, if you are not set straight, you have a long way to go before you realize that it's bad. It's a bad thing to do. It really is as simple as that. The way we're handling things here in the Valley, we're going to talk more about that as time goes on. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you're a social media user, at Broomhead KTAR is my personal Twitter handle, at Broomhead Show. Update you on what's happening and guests on the show. Please follow both. And Mike Broomhead, all one word, on Instagram. That's how you keep in touch between shows. We're back tomorrow. Until then, God bless.